as I present a few thoughts, this can be very interactive. So I'll start, maybe I'll present a few thoughts, but then we can get to talking about things together. So this afternoon, I want to present a few thoughts about poetry. Poetry. Emily's shaking her head already. When I say the word poetry, what do you think of?
Yuck.
Penny thinks of yuck, so we're gonna have to win Penny over with the concept of poetry. Anybody else? Alan? Song of Solomon. Yeah, and so just generally that idea of songs and words coming together. Yeah, okay. The Psalms, yes. I mean, many people consider the Psalms to be poetry, and that in fact is what I'm getting at, is the poetry of the Bible. So this won't just be poetry 101. American Lit or something. We are actually focused on the poetry and the Word of God. But yes, poetry in the Psalms. And some of the things I say today and kind of point out about a passage we're going to look at actually fits with the psalm that we heard from Gene this morning, in Psalm 139. Who else? Anything else when I say poetry? We've got yuck. We've got Song of Songs.
I never understood.
All right, well, I don't know that I do either. Right. So it's this mix of words. It can go with melodies. It can turn into songs. And actually, I do think that when we read something that's the Psalms, some of them were sung, or some version of things we would know as singing. And so there's this heavy crossover between like a hymn, and that has words that are lined out in rhyming verse sometimes, and concepts of some of our scripture that we would say poetry. So I'll set some definitions here as we look at one passage and treat it as poetry, and some of the elements that I like about poetry, but we also just are concentrating on the word. So some of the things I like when I think of poetry, I'm going to convince you here, Penny, okay. Poetry. Some of the things I like about it is you can use just a few words to generate big ideas. So, you know, instead of there, this is different from a legal brief, Jennifer, or even a medical chart, Sarah, which is you've got to have all the details, right? And sometimes I think in a legal brief, you're exhausting your details to sort of, you know, make sure you've covered every single thing that someone else might say. Or in a medical chart, you've kind of got a series of things and several different topics that you've got to make sure there's all the details. In poetry, you might have just a few lines. And what we're going to find in this bit of biblical poetry, I hope you will sense with me, is that with just a few lines, it can transform your life in some cases. Right, it can be something or at the very least, it might stick with you for the rest of the afternoon. But in some cases, it really turns around some ideas that you have with just a few words. So that's one virtue of poetry. I'll say another thing is some people, when they think of poetry, they think of like rhyming, and it can be those things that are rhyme. Roses are red, violets are blue. I've got a Bible, you do too. Like you could, those things that people can remember. And Emily is very good at remembering the words, like in remembering lines of songs and poetry. I am not. But sometimes the poetry will create such an image. So I'm more of an image person. It creates such an image that it just sticks with you. And you kind of think, maybe I don't get the exact words right if I recounted it to you, but that image that it produces, you know, really dwells with you. So the poem we're going to look at, if you want to open your Bible or you can just listen as we talk, is in Job. So Job chapter 28. Now this is the middle of the book of Job. This is the point where Job is talking with his companions, and it's about halfway through the book of Job. So Job has been afflicted, and he and his companions are trying to unpack what is going on here and what's the way forward. Now, chapter 28 is treated, in some circles, is treated as its own. You can pull it as just a standalone thing. It's Job talking, and he's in the midst of talking to his companions. But many people over the years have treated it, and they'll sometimes refer to this as the hymn to wisdom. So the topic is wisdom, and it's sometimes called the hymn to wisdom. So we're going to read chapter 28 basically on its own, but I'll just tell you a few things that it's in the midst of Job talking to his friends. So when the first few lines, you may be mistaken for thinking it's like a geology textbook. It is not. It is much deeper than that, and it is Job starting into a discussion about wisdom. It also echoes some things that God says later in the book of Job, at the end of the book of Job, in chapter 38 and 39, I think, is when the Lord speaks out to Job and basically affirms some of these aspects of wisdom and you know, what the Lord is in the context of the world. So what I thought we could do, reading chapter 28 as poetry and unpacking some of it and noticing some things about it, is I'm going to read a few sections. We're going to kind of break it down into three sections. So I'm going to read the first 11 verses, and then we might discuss that. And then I'm going to read the next few verses. Okay, before I read, though, sorry, there's a couple other things. Poetry appreciation, Penny. Ready? So Hebrew poetry, I've been reading up a little bit on Hebrew poetry. So the Psalms, Song of Solomon, these, you know, certain chapters in Job, some scholars have studied them as Hebrew poetry, and they've noticed some things that are patterns that are characteristic. Just like if you looked at American poetry in the 18th century, there's some certain things that people do with it that are norms of how to do it. And they've found that in these Hebrew poems. So one of the things is oftentimes the verses are paired. Like they'll have these pairings of things. Like in Psalm 139, he knows my sitting down and my rising up, right? It's my coming, I can't remember the words, right? I'm not the precise word guy. My staying and my going, you know, but it's the pairing will happen. So we're going to see this right away. That there's a sense of pairing, and it's almost like a layering. So watch how it kind of builds up in the language and builds up these images. That's just one thing to watch out for. Okay, I'm going to read the first 11 verses, and then we'll go back and slowly look at a few of them. So Job 28, starting in verse 1 to verse 11. Surely there is a mine for silver and a place where gold is refined. Iron is taken from the earth, and copper is smelted from ore. Man puts an end to darkness and searches every recess for ore in the darkness and the shadow of death. He breaks open a shaft away from people in places forgotten by feet. They hang far away from men. They swing to and fro. As for the earth, from it comes bread, but underneath it is turned up as by fire. Its stones are the source of sapphires, and it contains gold dust. That path no bird knows, nor has the falcon eyes seen it. The proud lions have not trodden it, nor has the fierce lion passed over it. He puts his hand, that's his man, man puts his hand on the flint. He overturns the mountains at the roots. He cuts out channels in the rocks. And his eyes see every precious thing. He dams up the streams from trickling. What is hidden, he brings forth to light. Okay. Ooh, some interesting imagery there. What pops out? Does anybody have like something that I read there that you think, oh, that was interesting or strange or what's he talking about? Or you liked it. You thought, whoa, that's an interesting. Kara. Right, treasure. So in those first few verses, it's describing these are the treasures that we seem to value as people, right? And not only that, but we will go to ends of the earth to find them. So you said the words hard work, humans hard work to go find that stuff, right? And so at the beginning, we've got those pairings of things where there's gold, there's a place for silver, and a place where gold is refined. Iron is taken from the earth, and copper is smelted. So it's those pairings and layerings. And those first few verses, it is describing things that were valuable, valuable minerals, valuable stones and rocks. And I mean, I will say one thing for me when I read this recently, I thought, wow, people have, this was thousands of years ago, right, when these works were put down. And some of these, I think we'll see in later in the verse, there's some stones mentioned that I don't think have aged as well. They're not as valuable anymore. But some of these, gold and iron, we still value. And so just think, for thousands of years, we as people have gone out and sought, where do we find these things? So it's one of the things that we're not that far away from these people that are, you know, the what's being described here. We still do some of this stuff. We figure out, oh, that's something we value. And then we go, you know, we spend all our time trying to find it. So it can feel both virtuous but also distracting. What else? Anybody else have a line you thought jumped out? All right. Yeah, go ahead.
You think of the stones that are down there, and from the stones, it's found sapphires,
sapphires and gold dust there in chapter six, or verse 6.
Right. Underneath the earth is amazing.
Right. Yeah. We're willing to go underneath the earth. I mean, I can barely pull weeds from my garden, but some people have figured out how to burrow deep into the earth to go find this stuff. Sarah, what were you going
to
say? Right.
He can do those things like we read in verses 10 or 9 through 11.
Yeah.
Things that man can't do.
Right. Yeah, and that's right. There is a majesty and an awe around nature that is already here around us. That's God's work. I did wonder, Sarah, if Kevin, what he would think of verse 5. As for the earth, from it comes the bread, and underneath it is turned up as by fire. Do farmers think that when they look at their field of wheat? But that's, so again, that's an image, like one line where you're thinking, it's not just, oh yeah, we have a wheat field there and somebody will make bread out of that. But this is a whole space where, you know, all of our human life could be kind of witnessed in some ways in that one thing. Okay, so these first few verses are about, yeah, go ahead, Kara, yeah. Right, yeah, that these creatures are striving, the creation of Earth goes to these farthest stretches, but there's even this place beyond, yeah. Right, so that's about verse 7 in the birds and the falcon's eyes scene. Okay, so these first 11 verses, I do think we're getting at like what these first 11 verses are building, and there's something that, again, I've just been trying to read and learn about Hebrew poetry. Another thing that they will do sometimes if we read the Psalms a certain way or read these poems is, they've got these pairings of things and they build up this idea. So for these first 11 verses, we built this idea of, in some ways, the awesomeness of this world that we're in, but the things we will go do to get value out of it that we think are valuable. And it's kind of building this big concept. Then oftentimes these poems will have a turning point. They'll have a point where, and some of them, like for instance, when I was talking a little while ago about the poem in the middle of Jonah, there's the first half is about going down and being lamenting and feeling woe is me. And then the turning point is, but the Lord has my protection. And there's a turning back up. So I don't know that they always turn upward, but there's a turning point here. So the first 11 verses are about the majesty of the world and how far we'll go to get things and how hard we work. Verse 12, are you ready to read verse 12? Because this is the turning point. This is one of the key points in the poem. So I'm going to read the next several verses from about verse 12, I think, to verse 19. All right, we've established, maybe I'll do verse 10 and 11 just to lead up. Verse 10, he cuts out channels in the rocks and his eyes see every precious thing. His eye sees every precious thing. He dams up the streams from trickling. What is hidden, he brings forth to light. Verse 12. But where can wisdom be found? And where is the place of understanding? Man does not know its value, nor is it found in the land of the living. The deep says, it is not in me. And the sea says, it is not in me. It is not with me. Verse 15. It cannot be purchased for gold. Nor can silver be weighed for its price. It cannot be valued in the gold of Ophir. in precious onyx or sapphire. Neither gold nor crystal can equal it, nor can it be exchanged for the jewelry of fine gold. No mention shall be made of coral or quartz, for the price of wisdom is above rubies. The topaz of Ethiopia cannot equal it, nor can it be valued in pure gold. So gold comes up several times here. It's repeated, right, from the first section of verses where these are all things of value, gold and rubies and sapphires. In the first section, it's all about we'll go to the ends of the earth to get these things. But where shall wisdom be found? And you can't buy it with any of that stuff. Whatever striving you make to the ends of the earth, whatever catalog of precious gems or stones you have, those do not get you wisdom. Any thoughts as you read that? Did anything stick out? Is topaz still valuable? Kara, what were you going to say? Yeah, verse 12, that's the turn, the switching gears, exactly. Right. And it's both those precious stones, but even there in verse 14, it says, the deep says, it is not in me, and the sea says, it is not with me. So even those magnificent and awesome things, you know, we can go to the ocean, we can see the mountains, we can see things that are part of our creation that are amazing. Wisdom isn't even there. So the places we can go, the things we can strive for, is not where we find wisdom. Anybody else have a line? Yes, Penny.
Yes, when I saw but.
But, yes.
We've been hearing about man and man.
Yeah, yeah.
What he tries to do, but I saw but.
Right,
God.
Right.
Where shall wisdom be found? And I heard the natural man does not understand spiritual things, but it must be revealed to him.
Right.
By the Spirit of God.
Right. Yeah.
And that's where we're going to find it. Is he basically, by the power of the Holy Spirit, is showing us, mining out all this for us. So
right.
Truly see, when you look at the ocean, like, man, how deep is that ocean?
Right.
God, through so many things, reveals that to us about the depth of his love.
Right. Yeah. So there are things to witness. We do witness these things in the natural world, and some of them are awesome in their way, but this wisdom, this understanding, is beyond that.
Yes.
Even that, and that but is very important. Okay, let's keep going, and let's read the last section, the last third or so of this poem, because I think it also ends in a particularly important way for us to take with us that really hit, you know, kind of hit me when I read it recently. All right, so picking up after verses 17, 18, 19, as it's again cataloging the precious gems, precious stones, you know, precious things of the world, he again asks in verse 20, from where then does wisdom come? And where is the place of understanding? It is hidden from the eyes of all living and concealed from the birds of the air. Destruction and death say, we have heard a report about it with our ears. God understands its way. And he knows its place, for he looks to the ends of the earth and sees under the whole heavens, to establish a weight for the wind and apportion the waters by measure. When he made a law for the rain and the path for the thunderbolt, when he saw wisdom and declared it, he prepared it indeed. He searched it out. And to man he said, behold, the fear of the Lord, that is wisdom. And to depart from evil is understanding. So just go ahead, Kathy. Yeah.
James 1:5. If any of you lack wisdom, let him ask of God that giveth to all men liberally and upbraideth not, and it shall be given to him.
Yeah, so in James 1:5, so pairing that with this reading of, you know, where God is telling you where wisdom is, and we'll get back to this, but you're saying in James 1:5, the core of that verse is if anyone asks for it, God will give it to him.
Here in this chapter, they're searching for it.
They're searching for it. They're striving for it. They're going to great lengths for all these precious things. And when it finally comes up to it, even those precious things cannot buy wisdom, cannot help you find wisdom. You have to ask God for it. Right, and so this last section, I think, you know, you've got these pretty elegant verses. This is back to sort of the poetic things that are images that really catch my eye and stick with me. Is it's sort of back to cataloging those awesome things, awe-inspiring things about the world, but it's putting it in a new context because it's saying, you know, in verse 24, starting in verse 23, God understands its way and he knows its place. So all this stuff we've just been talking about that are so amazing and awe-inspiring, God understands all of that. God understands its way, and he knows its place. For he looks to the ends of the earth and sees under the whole heaven to establish a weight for the wind and apportion the waters by measure. God created all of this, everything that you thought was valuable and awe-inspiring. He knows that. And now he's going to give you the answer for wisdom. And I think then, to me, this part that really hit home for me in verse 28, when it finally lands with, where is wisdom found? Well, it's not found in a location. It's not found even in a book, necessarily. It's found in our action and our attitude and our behavior. Because he says, behold, the fear of the Lord. That's the first thing. And again, there's this pairing of ideas, wisdom and understanding. And now it's this pairing of what should we be doing? One is fear the Lord. That is wisdom. And not be afraid of the Lord, but, you know, having that attitude of fear and respect and reverence. Fear of the Lord is wisdom, and that's something we can wake up and either do or not do every day. So there's that. Fear of the Lord is wisdom, and to depart from evil is understanding. So again, it's not, oh yeah, it's in that room over there, or it's in that book you should read or that degree you should get. It is the act of departing from evil. That is understanding. Fear the Lord, departing from evil. And these are, you know, things that, I mean, it's not in our power, but it is things that, again, we have to receive and then take up as our action daily. And that's where we find wisdom. It's not traversing one geography or another. It's not saving up so you can buy wisdom somewhere. It is waking up every day, fear the Lord, and depart from evil. And knowing those two things. And that, to that point in James, that's the gift that God gives us. We're all capable. I mean, it doesn't always seem like that probably every single day that we're doing our best at that. But it's not something that only rich people get to have this wisdom, or only these sorts of people over there get to have it. It's available to everyone, as Kathy points out from James. Kara, what do you think?
In verse 23.
Yes. Oh, right, yeah.
And the life. And then it says that he knows the place thereof. And how, you know, Moses cried out. You know, they were in such a terrible place. They had made the golden calf and all of that. And but Moses cries out and says, show me your way. Show me your glory. I want to know your way. And God's response to him was, there's a place by me that you can stand on the rock.
Right.
And that's where, you know, I'll let my glory pass by you. But I mean, all of this was, you know, finding her goal, you know, getting through those rocks to find the choices of minerals and things. But ultimately, then, really, Jesus is that wisdom. He is the choicest thing. And then just loving him, like you said, the attitude of the heart, that's what draws us near to him and gets us.
Right.
Andrew?
Yes, Gary. Brother Gary.
Fearing, reverencing the Lord, isn't that the beginning of wisdom?
Right. I think that's right. Yeah, in the King James Version it says fear, but I think that idea of reverence is that it's that version, yeah. Yeah, that's the beginning of wisdom. So, okay, Sarah.
No, I was just thinking of the verse that says Christ is made to us wisdom, knowledge, sanctification.
That Christ is made to us wisdom.
Christ is wisdom. That's wisdom is Christ.
Right. And I mean, I think that can also fit that idea of wisdom is Christ. And this is coming from Job in the Old Testament. But, you know, I think that, that sense that Kara's bringing forth in chapter 23 of God understands its way and he knows its place, that can link it to these ideas to come, for sure. Penny, what did you think of this poetry?
It's pretty good.
It's pretty good.
I don't like reading poems.
That's okay. This one you could read again, though, right?
I like the way you did it.
All right, well, I just wrapping up here, I suppose. Unless other people, you have other thoughts that come to mind? Well, hopefully this gives you some sense of new images to take with you, that idea of, no matter what we value in this world, and we do value things, and we do spend a lot of time going and doing these things, none of them compare at all to the wisdom of the Lord, and that's received, it's given freely in a sense, if we will respond with reverence and fear of the Lord and departing from evil, and ultimately with Christ, you're right. Brother Gene. Oh, yes. Okay. So Brother Gene has said in English poetry, we rhyme words. I'll come up with an example. But rhyming words is typical of English, American poetry. But you're saying Hebrew poetry, the idea is rhyming thoughts. Yes. So putting these thoughts together, putting thoughts like wisdom and understanding, and that those are paired together because they rhyme, because they echo one another, because they kind of resonate with one another. They go together. Yeah, that's a beautiful thing. All right, well, that's it for your poetry lesson today. Thank you, class. We'll pick back up at a later time, but let's finish with one more song.